Parry the Hammer with further review by Housecrafters. Housecrafters provides complete home renovation services with one call does it all. That includes exterior home services like roofing, siding, home additions, and much more. Call 716-646-NAIL.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Further Review podcast for the Buffalo News. I'm Jace Kursky, joined by executive sports editor Perrin Keyes. Perrin, we got a busy week. We got a quick turnaround to a Thursday game. Let's get right to it and talking about the most recent win for the Buffalo Bills over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 44-32. Looked like a different offense against Tampa Bay on Sunday out there at Highmark Stadium, and obviously that has to start with the quarterback. Six touchdowns for Josh Allen, three passing, three rushing. He's the only player in NFL history now to do that in two games. Perrin, it feels like every week we are writing some variation of the sentence, Josh Allen is the only player in history to do blank. This time it's six touchdowns, three and three. Remarkable performance from the quarterback, especially considering the way the game started, which we'll get to. But this is the reigning NFL MVP who reminded everyone why he won that award. What was your takeaway from the offense and Allen's performance yesterday?
How about that number 17, huh? He might have a future in the NFL. Looks like he's doing okay. 19-30, 317 yards, as you said, three touchdowns, two interceptions. And, why don't we start there? Why don't we start with the bad? Josh Allen with the two-handed chest pass to start off the game on the Bills' first series, way down in their own territory. And then trying to make something out of nothing, going over the middle to a target that probably, I'm sure if you asked him, and somebody probably did ask him yesterday, would you like to have that one back? And of course the answer is yes on the second interception, on both of them probably. But you guys have certainly seen this from the start of Josh Allen's career. He's prone to take a couple of gambles, and a lot of times they work, and sometimes they don't. And this is a classic version, maybe a vintage version of Josh Allen, a case of where you take the good with the bad. Hey, sometimes he's going to make a little flip with two guys on him near the goal line falling down and hit your third tight end, Quentin Morris, like he did during one game last year. And I thought about, I can't remember which game, you have a better memory, Jay. I can't remember which game where he hit Jackson Hawes with the little flip, running to his left on the goal line at home earlier this year. And so, hey, I think you're right, but I for sure it was a night game, and frankly, it doesn't matter because we've seen some variation of a Josh Allen pass like that so many times over the course of his career. So you take the good with the bad. There's been a lot of bad, frankly, this year with Josh Allen. I think one of our quarterback analysts, Jim Kubiak, in addition to you guys, of course, Jay and Lance Lysowski and Catherine Fitzgerald, have done a fine job of pointing out all the times, and there were times, especially early in this game as well, where he had open receivers underneath, or he had open receivers in the flat, and he decided he was going to put on the Superman cape and try to go for the home run ball, and certainly has done that on many, many occasions this year, in kind of return to form, or revert to form of some of his early career adventures. But the bottom line is when you needed him to be at his best, he was certainly at his best. A classic heave across the field that, so few quarterbacks can make, all the way again across the field at Tyrell Shavers for 43 yards. And then just him being the bulldozer near the goal line and all those things. They needed all these points. There were 9 lead changes in this game. And, he had to be the general. He had to keep matching Baker Mayfield score for score, and he did. So, I know you mentioned this, Jay, and I'm sure this is where you'll take it from here. Bills have a lot of defects. They still have a lot of problems to get fixed between now and the end of the season if they're going to make the postseason and make a run like so many other teams have, despite not having home field advantage. But the fact is, when you've got number 17, and when he's playing like number 17 is capable of playing, that may be the best player in the world, and that covers up a lot of defects.
Perrin, this game reminds me, interestingly enough, of one of the last times they played Tampa. The difference was that game was down in Tampa. It was actually a game that the Bills lost. It was to Tom Brady in overtime. But it was halftime of that game. It's a pretty famous story now that most Bills fans are probably familiar with. But they go into halftime. They're getting, you know, the brakes beaten off of them down in Tampa. And Brian Daboll and Josh Allen just kind of say, you know, forget it, for lack of a better term. And they go out and they open up the offense. And in a lot of ways, this felt like opening up the offense and saying, we got Josh Allen, let's go. And, you know, it's kind of the performance that we've been waiting for. Yeah, you're going to have some good with the bad. And I wrote about that. But, you know, the line that I used was that very often, overwhelmingly, the good outweighs the bad. And that was the case yesterday. I mean, this is 44 points with three turnovers, one horrible turnover, one pretty bad one, and then a lost fumble, which was not good. Probably should have been a fair catch. I mean, you're looking at an offense that could have put up 59, 60 points if they don't turn the ball over with the way that they were moving it. And so I wonder if Joe Brady and, you know, Adam Henry and Ronald Curry, the coaching staff, looks at this performance and says, oh, yeah, that's what he can do. Not that they needed a reminder, but maybe they did. And maybe they say, let's get back to that. Let's take the good with the bad. Let's open things up. Let's go. Let's let Josh Allen be Josh Allen. And, you know, vintage is kind of a strange word for a guy who's not 30 years old yet, but it felt like a vintage Josh Allen performance. And, you know, it was, speaking of 30, passed Peyton Manning for most total touchdowns by a player in NFL history. Under 30 years old. So just, you know, these are the names, right? It's pretty heady company. You know, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, we're writing about the things that Josh Allen can do. Yesterday was a reminder that he is the MVP for a reason. And I'm very interested and eager now to see, you know, when you look at the defenses coming up, Houston's got a good defense. Pittsburgh's got a good defense. This team is going to be challenged offensively. And that's not to say that everything is fixed. But yesterday was a big step in the right direction, particularly for the offense and for Josh Allen. And I'll be interested to see where he takes it from here.
Harry the Hammer goes to work.
Harry the Hammer here from House Crafters, and I am one happy hammer. We just finished this addition and kitchen, and it's beautiful. Look at this place. It's gorgeous. If you have a remodeling project in mind, a kitchen, bathroom, or mother-in-law apartment, one call really does do it all at House Crafters. For a free estimate, call House Crafters at 646-NAIL.
Well, Jay, they say, as the old adage goes, defense wins championships. If that's true, the Buffalo Bills still got a few items on their to-do list before they get to the point where they can start thinking about winning championships. So, you know, we talk about the good and the bad with Josh Allen. Let's talk about the good and the bad with the defense. They gave up, if I'm not mistaken, 202 rushing yards to Sean Tucker, our old friend from Syracuse, and the Buccaneers. Well, I should say 106 yards to Sean Tucker, 202 yards overall to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Not what you would call the 85 Bears-like performance that you were looking for. But they did hold Emeka Egbuka relatively in check. And despite all the third downs that Baker Mayfield was able to convert, they did what they needed to do when you got down to crunch time. I handled the live updates for BuffaloNews.com during the game. And I have no way of proving this, but I guess you can go back and look at the transcript of it. But, you know, I had said just before Cole Bishop's diving interception of Baker Mayfield, I said, boy, the Bills can sure use a takeaway right here. And lo and behold, there you go. One takeaway, which certainly sort of swung the momentum in a very back-and-forth game with 9 lead changes. And then, of course, the takeaway by Daquan Jones late in the game that Dorian Williams recovered. So, again, a lot to improve. But by the same token, they did improve in-game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's troubling that it takes so long that you know we've heard sort of repeatedly from Sean McDermott after games that, you know, they've needed to kind of get a feel for what the opposing offense wanted to do. Maybe they saw some new things that they hadn't seen before on tape. You know, I think the defensive coaching staff led by McDermott and Bobby Babich has shown a pretty nice job of doing, you know, making in-game adjustments. You'd like it to get to the point where you don't need so many of those, right? And maybe have a little bit better of a plan, you know. But for me, Perrin, the problem is the run defense. It's a major concern. It's been a major concern. You know, 202 yards, as you said, 5.2 per on the ground. Mayfield had not had a carry, I believe, in three games before this. He goes for 5.39 on the ground, 13 yards of a long run and one rushing touchdown. So, you know, and we've seen quarterbacks, you know, hurt this team before on the ground. I think, back to Patrick Mahomes and some of his scrambles and how effective those have been. The Bills have a troubling, and this dates well before your time here in Buffalo, Perrin, of making stars out of unheard of third string running backs. And, you know, this continues again. S. Tucker, I'm looking at it. Had you not said Sean, I probably wouldn't have known his first name was Sean because, you know, who is this guy, right? You know, there's no Bucky Irving. It's not Rashad White. You know, it's their third string running back, and he goes 19 for 106, 43 yards of a long run. I don't know that he was touched on that play. So, yeah, it's a big time concern for me, the run defense. You know, it's troubling that the same issues kind of continue to present themselves as problems for this team. And Lance wrote about it, or actually tweeted about it in game. You know, this team was plus 24 last year in turnover differential, led the NFL. At one point, they were minus one for the season after the turnovers against Tampa Bay. Now, I think that maybe swung the other way with the interception and the late fumble, as you mentioned there. So they might be even, maybe they're even plus one at this point. But the point is that there has been a natural regression in terms of the takeaways. And the turnovers on offense have gone up too. So that's troubling, right? Because, you know, you said it, they could really use a takeaway. Well, you don't want to rely on those. You don't want to have to count on those because they don't always come. And so to me, third down defense, particularly third and long defense, I mean, the play before that 43-yard touchdown run, what happened? Third and 12 conversion. And like those kind of things just have to stop. They've got to get better. When you get into favorable situations, favorable down and distances on defense, you got to get off the field. And Tampa's goes 9 of 16. They're over 50% on third down conversions. I think they were number 30 in the league last year on third down defense. They're up to number 18. So they're middle of the pack, but you want to be better than that. You want to get the ball back to Josh Allen. I mean, this is not rocket science here. This is football 101, right? Get the ball back to your offense. Get off the field defensively. Well, the best way to do that is to you know, slow the run on the early downs, get it into third and long, and then get off the field. And, you know, they were not good enough for a long stretch in this game. And this was a Tampa team that's missing some really big weapons. Mike Evans out. Bucky Irving is out. Chris Godwin is out, right? And so,
missing, you know, they still bring it.
No, that adds to it, right? And so, yeah, they were missing a lot of pieces. Now, that being said, and I know I just threw a lot at you, I want to give the defense credit at times because they did get that takeaway. Cole Bishop is developing into a playmaker for this defense. That's a real positive. They did get some third down stops when they needed to, including a three and out after they had retaken the lead in the fourth quarter. That was a huge three and out. And so I think if you are looking at this, you know, holistically, you're saying, yeah, they got some problems defensively, but there were some positives to take away from it in terms of when they needed some place to step, you know, when either players or they needed situations in games that they were able to deliver at times, especially late in that game.
Oh, there's no question. I don't want this to sound mean-spirited, but if you'd have asked us, anybody, 6 or 8 weeks ago, would Cole Bishop be a difference maker on the defense, I don't know that anybody would have said yes. He's getting better. He's turning into a playmaker. The run defense, you mentioned Sean Tucker's long run there on the sweep. Tristan Wirfs was looking for, you know, the pulling tackle. Their great left tackle, he was looking for somebody to block. He finally found somebody, but it was way downfield before he found somebody to get a body onto. A lot of those runs were untouched. And I know Terrell Bernard said this after the game, we got to get better with run fits. Well, that's something that somebody on the defense has probably said maybe the entirety of this season after any particular game. And so that does get, now it did get better in the second half, as you said. And I thought Terrell Bernard, incidentally, looked a whole lot better. He looked more like himself. I guess maybe the ankle's getting better. He's sort of moving around a little bit. He got blown out a couple times, sure. But he did have a decent game there, especially in the second half. And generally speaking, this makes me wonder, and again, you alluded to it, this is sort of before my time here in Buffalo, but you know, you've seen so many, you mentioned a couple of things, the turnovers and takeaways. We mentioned this, Lance Lysowski had a story about this in our season preview. It was almost inevitable that number was going to sort of regress to the mean, right? I mean, it's just, even if the coaching staff had coached it better are every bit as well. The players that executed everything as just as well. Sometimes the ball doesn't bounce your way. A deflected pass doesn't go, you know, right into a defender's hands or whatever. The turnover margin was not going to be anywhere near as wide as it was last season. And just as you said, you don't want to bank on that because AFC Championship game, you didn't get enough because they weren't there. And a different playoff game against the Chiefs started to run wild in the second half because they knew the Bills couldn't stop them. Pacheco, I think, had 97 yards. Clyde Edwards-Helaire had, you know, got loose for a couple of times. And the Chiefs, if I'm not mistaken, averaged something like 6 yards per carry. This was the end of the 2023 season in Buffalo. And so, yeah, you better get that fixed, just as you said. But again, high marks. Look, we thought the secondary was in deep trouble. It looks like the secondary is playing better. If the front seven starts to come around and maybe some of the hurt players start to heal up a little bit better, hey, look, maybe you can get yourself sort of toward the middle of the pack as a defense, and that's enough to get you by with number 17 on the other side. Well, Jay, somebody who was missing, at least on the field, he was in the stadium on the sideline looking at all the action unfold and watching his offensive teammates put up 44 points on the board. Keon Coleman, the 33rd overall pick in the 2024 draft, who was expected to be the Bills' number one receiver, a downfield threat, certainly a contested catch threat, who has sort of continually run into small problems, not big problems, not huge off-the-field problems, but small problems nonetheless. And one after the other leads to finally him becoming a healthy scratch on Sunday because he's tardy for a team meeting for at least the third time in his not even 2-year-long career. So, Jay, we'll just start with this. Bills score 44 points. Number zero is not on the field. What do they do with him?
That's a great question because small problems have become a big problem now, right? And, you know, you mentioned it there. Three separate occasions he's late. The second of those, the first one earlier this season, didn't have to be brought public. Sean McDermott made a point. It amounted to 6 plays that he missed one drive, the first drive of a game. Sean McDermott easily could have said that was part of the game plan, and it would have been nobody would have batted an eye. Nobody would have been ever known, you know, been none the wiser, right, to that situation. So the fact that McDermott wanted to go public with it says a lot, right? It says that they were trying to deliver a message to him. Well, message was not received, right? Because now Keon Coleman is late again on Friday, and it ended up costing him an entire game. Deion Dawkins said it best after the game. It's time to grow up, right? That's the message to Keon Coleman, and it's not being delivered just from the coaching staff. It's being delivered from his peers, you know, from his teammates. And when a leader on the team like Deion Dawkins is saying that publicly, you can only imagine what's being said privately. I think this is a massive concern for this team, clearly. If the light bulb doesn't go on for Keon Coleman at this point, it's not going to, right? Because not only is he missing the game, he's watching his team score 44 points. He's watching his offense perform better than it has all season, with the possible exception of the fourth quarter against Baltimore. Tyrell Shavers, the guy that probably benefited directly the most in terms of playing time, went 4 catches, 90 yards, and a touchdown. They're not looking back. They're not waiting for Keon Coleman. They're not desperate for Keon Coleman to get back onto the field. You could argue, heck, you could sit here and say they were better without him. And so that needs to be of primary concern for Keon Coleman is, hey, if I want to be not just a part of this, not just a part of what's going on here in Buffalo, if I want to have an NFL career, I got to get my act together. And the evidence would suggest right now that if you were skeptical that he was going to do that, that would be fair to be, right? Because he's had warnings before. He's had, you know, Sean McDermott said after the game, you want to use baseball analogy, he had 2 strikes. Well, Friday was the 3rd strike, and what happens? You're out of a game. And so, you know, there is some situations that, you know, the team has to deal with in terms of numbers. It's a short week with Houston coming up. Can he get back on the field? Mecole Hardman suffered a calf injury. He's part of that mix at wide receiver. We'll see if he's able to go. Gabe Davis was called up from the practice squad. Do the Bills want to use another call-up? Is Davis in a position physically coming back from injury that he's able to make such a turnaround? I think a lot of those questions will be asked here over the next 24 hours to Sean McDermott. There's a possibility that Coleman gets back in the lineup as soon as Thursday. There's also a possibility that the Bills look at this and say, we're not going to mess with a good thing, and we put up 44, and as I said in the first segment, probably could have been more if it weren't for some self-inflicted wounds. So Keon Coleman needs to tread very, very carefully here, not just in terms of the rest of this season in the short term, but this is, we're talking long-term career-type stuff for Keon Coleman at this point. All right, Perrin, and as we mentioned earlier, a short week for the Bills, quick turnaround, long trip down to Houston, their longest of the season, actually. It's a pretty easy travel schedule in that regard, but this is a tough one, right? You're going down on a short week against a really good defense in Houston, a team that the Bills lost to actually last season down there. Different makeup of this Texans team, but the similarity being the defense is pretty legit. Houston comes into this game with a 5-5 record in the thick of the playoff race, in the thick of the wild card race. The division certainly looks like it's going to be the Colts, the AFC South. But big question, obviously, and we'll learn more here in the next day or two, is the status of C.J. Stroud, their starting quarterback. They're coming off of a rather uninspired, at least offensively, 16-13 win over a pretty terrible Tennessee team. That being said, though, Perrin, I do not anticipate this being an easy game at all for the Bills. Maybe let's start there with just your general thoughts on the Texans, and then we can kind of, you know, talk a little bit about the AFC race as a whole, as we usually do.
I couldn't agree with you more as it relates to the Texans, Jay. You say, well, hey, they're 5-5, and they only put 16 points up against Tennessee. And maybe they don't have C.J. Stroud. Maybe they will. Who knows? Look, take a little bit of a deeper look. The Texans have won 3 out of their last 4 games. The one lost was to Denver. And they had Denver. They had an 8-point lead on Denver as well. Davis Mills has, frankly, not played all that bad. You know, if you want to go back a little bit farther even, they have won 5 out of their last 7 games. The one loss was at Seattle on the road. And again, the other loss was to Denver. So they're certainly a whole lot better off right now than they were at the start of this season. And just as you said, D'Amico Ryans is going to get the most out of his guys, particularly on defense. We know that Nico Collins is a downfield threat. We had talked a lot of this year about how these downfield threats and these explosive number one receivers have given the Bills fits. They haven't in the last 2 games, really. I take that back. I guess Jalen Waddle got him pretty good the week before. But, you know, Emeka Egbuka, they held him in check a little bit. But, you know, Nico Collins is going to be, you know, another difficult assignment, whether it's Davis Mills throwing to him or C.J. Stroud. And so, yeah, this is difficult. This is a difficult road trip. They obviously lost it. Lost this trip to Houston last year. And the Texans also know that they need to play their best on a short week. Advantage always to the home team, clearly, on a short week like this, because if you're Buffalo, obviously you have today, you have Tuesday to get in whatever you can get in, and then Wednesday's a travel day, and that's it. Whereas the Texans obviously don't have that travel day. And then looking ahead, they have road games after the Bills. They have road games at Indianapolis, at Kansas City, which is also 5-5 and needs every win they can get before they finish up with a couple of easier teams. So they know they have to play their best here against the Bills. Hey, what can you say? It's going to be a tight turnaround. And, you know, Josh Allen's going to need to be Josh Allen. The Bills are going to be – they did open up as a 3.5-point favorite. They're now 4.5. I'm a little bit fascinated by the line and what it means. I don't know exactly what that line movement means, unless they think that unless somebody knows something about Stroud and whether he can go. But yeah, you know, again, look, go one game back if you're the Bills. You want to start taking teams lightly, any team lightly. You do so at your own peril. And you know, as we mentioned, they're not good enough top to bottom. Let's be honest. The Bills are not good enough top to bottom right now to overlook anybody. And again, they can't afford to lose another game. Listen, they, you know, we can talk home field advantage and AFC playoff race and number one seed. That's a little bit of a foolish assignment right now, because as you've mentioned so many times, the Patriots have a 1.5 game advantage over the Bills. Of course, they're going to play here on December 14th, or I should say in Foxborough on December 14th. But the Patriots have one of the easiest schedules of all time to close out. And so you really have, if you're the Bills, you have to worry about just winning all these games and making sure that your place in the postseason is secure. And that starts at 8:15 p.m. on Thursday in Houston.
Things really starting to take shape here in the AFC race, and this game Thursday night is very big in that regard. And so Perrin and I will be back on Friday. Again, quick turnaround for the Bills, quick turnaround for us here at the Further Review Podcast. For Perrin Keyes, I'm Jay Skursky. Thank you so much for watching the latest edition of the Further Review Podcast.
This is Harry the Hammer for Further Review by Housecrafters. Housecrafters provides complete home renovation services with one call does it all. That includes interior home services as well as windows and doors. Call 716-646-NAIL.